The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in Big Fish products, and The Muskie Shop.
All right, folks, welcome to The Muskie 360 Podcast. We've got a really, really great guest on the line right now. It's Jay from The Muskie Shop. How you doing, my man?
Hey, Steven. Great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. I know you're up there freezing to death right now.
It's not a, it's kind of a bleak weather forecast. We got almost blizzard conditions coming tomorrow morning, Wednesday. So, not looking forward to that, but, it's part of winter in the Northwoods, I
Absolutely.
Guess.
Well, I do know something that's hot that's coming up though, is, and one reason we got you on is you've got a super hot sale coming up for Black Friday. Tell me about the sale, man. I'm actually excited about it. My wife is not. And my pocketbook is not, but I am excited about it, and I'm ready to drop some dollars. What's the big Black Friday sale this year at the Muskie Shop?
It starts Wednesday, the 27th, day before Thanksgiving, and it starts at noon. And we're running 15% off everything on the website.
Everything.
That includes you know, all the lures, rods, reels, tackle boxes, even gift cards.
Oh, wow.
And they'll run through Cyber Monday, which I believe is December 2nd. So it's not quite a week, but almost a week worth of time for everyone to, get their order in for their Christmas presents this year.
Oh, absolutely. And then you said like 15% off. I know you guys run those gift card sales. And if you think about it, you guys are basically giving away free money on that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Man, someone could. Yeah, it would be easy to take advantage of that and really, really cash in on some. We do. This is the big one. This is pretty much once a year. We have sales and specials now and then, and we might run some other specials before Christmas. In terms of like free shipping or something maybe, mm-hmm. but in terms of real value, this is the big one. So. It's going to be busy. We're never hands full.
Absolutely.
Keeping up. Yeah. Yeah.
The weather might be cold, but the sales are hot up north right now. So make sure you
make sure
poor Jay driving through 45 inches of snow to make sure you get your Christmas gifts, folks. So send a kind note with your order. One thing to point out though, if you're buying online, if you're like me and you have to buy online from the Muskie Shop, you have to use a promo code, correct? There's a promo code this year.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Just type in the word sale, SALE.
Cool. Hit
the apply button. This is during the checkout process, and you'll see the discount immediately take effect on mm-hmm. your total.
Very cool.
It couldn't be easier, really.
Very cool. Very cool. For us muskie fishermen are not known to be that tech savvy, though. I gotta point it out. We're out there.
Yep. If any problems with anything, just shoot us an email or give us a call. I mean, we'll be closed Thanksgiving Day, but I mean, of course the website remains open.
The web 24/7 at themuskieshop.com.
24/7. Yeah.
It never ends, folks. It's the fun that never ends. So anyway, one thing I want to talk to you about is because we're coming into 2020, we got essentially a month left. And we've got some new products that are hitting the market this in 2020, that are going to be pretty exciting. And if you haven't seen it yet, we did put a little blurb up about it, is they're redoing the Muskie Mojo series of rods, which is crazy popular. I know I guide, like all my guide rods are Muskie Mojos. I know tons of guys that are fishing those. Those are insanely popular series of rods for St. Croix, I believe, correct?
St. Croix rods. Yeah. Yeah. The Mojo series, the original ones that had, that purplish blank, kind of mm-hmm. a dark purple blank, that was kind of a way to ID them. They're going with a Win Grip, which is WINN.
Mm-hmm.
That's that. It's like that grip that's on like high end golf clubs and stuff like that. You know, it's mm-hmm. real weather resistant and real kind of tacky and yet soft and grippy.
Right.
That's kind of the trend. It's like a lot of reel manufacturers started putting them on their reel handles not that long ago, mm-hmm. too. That's not to mention they added models to it. So they really expanded. I think there's like 17 models.
Oh, yeah.
They about doubled the lineup, and including some telescoping models, too. So that's a first for St. Croix, I believe. Definitely in their muskie lineup. Absolutely. Yeah, they have a telescoping long rod. So. Guys with problems with storage in their rod lockers, I mean, problem solved.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing too about that grip. And a lot of guys, probably going, oh, what's this different grip? That has been the big thing on the pro bass circuit for a minute. You know, with mm-hmm. with that grip, if you look at other companies that are, like bass specific, not totally bass specific, like Lewes and some of these other brands. I mean, that grip, and I've actually held one of these in my hands already. It doesn't feel foreign. It doesn't feel odd. It actually is, I think, in the long run, is going to be a hand saver. You know, if you really start getting, I call it the claw, you're holding that rod all day long using jerk baits, and that's going to alleviate some of that. And also too, man, we get into some nasty weather situations. If it's rainy, I've seen some rods go overboard just from slippage. So I think that's going to be a big benefit. And I'm looking here.
You know, musky fishermen always been really loyal to cork.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's dominated the market for forever, but I mean, if you look at the amount of change that's taken place just in the last decade in muskie equipment,
absolutely,
changes are coming. Changes are here. This could be something that we're going to see a lot more people incorporate. I mean, time will tell, but yeah, they're good looking. We've had them in for about a month in stocks, so they started rolling them out. I guess you could say a little bit early, before actually 2020.
Right,
but
right.
It's a 2020 series, and yeah, they're pretty cool. Yeah, good feedback from the guys. We've got some pro staffers on St. Croix that work in the store, and I saw a lot of that type of stuff when their reaction, I guess. Right. Yeah, it's looking pretty good.
Yeah, that it's just one of those things. We're really good at being stubborn in musky fishing. We don't like change. no change. we're like, It took forever for just even longer rods to get out there. I'm sticking with my 7.6.
It did take a long time.
It did.
Yeah, it's longer than it should have.
But what you look at like bass fishing, right? And I always sort of point this out. And actually, Joe always talks about this, that, all this money and there's all this R&D and all these things going on in bass fishing. And these guys are like so quick to adapt new things. You look at like the Alabama rig, the multi-arm rigs and stuff like this that came out. It's like they were out 1 year and then the next year everyone's using it and everyone's adopted it. And like musky fishing, we all stand there with our arms crossed going, I don't know about that. takes 5-6 years. So, but I if you're on the fence on that grip, that's probably, I think the biggest thing I think you're going to see that from all manufacturers here pretty soon. I did pull it up. Talking about the different models they've got out, they really did expand that line. You've got the nine footers that are telescoping, and that 8.6 telescoping, which is gonna, a lot of people's rod lockers won't accommodate a lot of that stuff, which is cool. And then, what's some of the other stuff that we can expect to see in the store that's coming out for 2020, or maybe it might already be out just a hair earlier than that? What's sort of the other stuff that you're seeing come to market?
A lot of lures, a lot of new lures. Some are here already. Some are not. Bite back lures. They make the trilogies.
Yeah.
We've expanded on those, and he's working on a top secret spinner bait that I believe Lee Talkin from Today's Angler kind of had a concept of, because I think he fished with one a while back. And gave it to Scott from Biteback, and it's got a hinged arm on it. It's really neat. I actually don't even have a sample of it.
Right.
Lee's told me about it, and I think I saw it in one of their videos on Today's Angler, but where they're catching pike on them or something. And that's down the road. That's down the pipeline. Lake X, he's got a new surface bait out. I don't know if I'm supposed to say much about it, but it's a new surface bait. Let's see, Slammer Tackle, manufacturer of great crankbaits, tough plastic, solid plastic baits. He's got a new 5-inch model. I think it's kind of competing with that Lungeon, smaller, oversized bass crankbait kind of deal.
Right, right.
And those look really nice. I like the size on that.
You know,
speaking of Lee Lures, He's working on some new stuff.
Oh, very cool.
And we get the comments all the time. It's like, can you get these other baits from Lee Lures? And the guy is so bogged down with doing videos and and trying to make, you know, as many, you know, high-end, high-quality baits as he can.
Yeah, he's very much hands-on in that process, I believe, correct?
He is. I spoke with him today, and we were talking about his latest trip to Lake St. Clair and in the freezing cold weather and this and that. And he wanted to know, you know, what we needed for baits. And so we were chatting about that, but he's working on new stuff. What else? Meps, has some, couple new bucktails, call them kind of hybrid type bucktails.
Very cool.
And those are going to be very cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Bunch of other manufacturers, you know, are just, they're releasing new color lineups, or they're releasing a new size within an already established lure line. So, but yeah, there's a bunch of stuff. There's a bunch
of
Beaver's baits. He's got this crazy new bucktail. Are you familiar with those Beaver's baits?
It's
got that, that beaver tail, kind of soft plastic tail on a tied, mostly hair, some flashaboo body with that unusual front head. Well, he's manufactured one with a spinner in front of it, and it works.
That'd be super
It works. They were catching a lot of fish on them, so figured out how to produce that.
You know, it seems it seems like an arms race right now. It definitely in the blades, you know, and just a lot of different stuff coming, a lot of innovation. You know, that's what I think is so fantastic. There's so many interesting designs that are coming out, and people sort of rethinking the way that we fish blades for so long. And it's just an exciting time to be a musky fisherman on that end, because you have so many choices and so many people sort of putting new ideas out there. And it's just amazing. One thing that curious about, you know, we get in like the Shum line and some of the stuff from Chaos. Are they expanding that line? Is it just going to sort of be the same lineup that we saw last year with them?
Chaos in general, or or those? We had some, or I should say, we have some really cool custom ideas. So we're bringing in new custom colors, some really crazy stuff, including that ghost. Was it Ghost Walleye? That'll be available in the spring. Not everything is going to make it into the catalog. The thing with the catalog. Not to change gears.
No, absolutely. We got to talk. We got to talk.
I do the, I kind of put the catalog together every year, and it's, you know, it's kind of a chore. You know, it's a several month period, kind of a period of, just trying to assemble everything is difficult sometimes. This year is going really well, I must admit, with getting the products from the manufacturers that might be new, or that we need, you know, in terms of something we're adding. And the pricing and, you know, the color lineup, and we need all that information to put this thing together. And it's pretty much done. And we go to print in 2 months.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, about 2 months. Yeah. Yeah. So it comes out a little bit later in January. You know, it's like about 100, I think it's 156 pages. Should be the same size as last year. And, you know, most of it's product, of course. And, yeah, so that's going pretty well. And, which is kind of a load off, because usually I'm right now I'm behind schedule, and we got a lot of, there's a lot of due dates coming up right now, but I'm boring with details.
Well, everybody looks forward to getting that catalog. I know I have for years. Oh, mine's still sitting. You know, they're at the coffee table. I pick it up quite frequently, and you know, it's just, it's amazing. Cool. You guys send that out. It's such, I think, you know, everybody just waits with bated breath each year to get that in the mail. So he's saying it'll be there, folks. So it's going to have a lot of new cool stuff in it. And I look forward
to about late January. Look for it late January, early February, depending on how quick your post office delivers, you know, the mail, the bulk mailings.
Absolutely. And I'm sure, you know, you're going to be back on the podcast too, to talk new products as they come out. And I know a lot of people are going to be emailing you. You've put that teaser out there about Lee Lures, and I can imagine the inbox is going to be full on that one here shortly. So you got to come, you got to come once you get the inside scoop there. So, well, I'm going to put you on the hot seat for a second, if you're up for it, to help answer Musky 360 questions. What do you think?
Sure.
We get
I'll try.
All righty. So, I'm just going to go ahead and fire away here. And the first one is from Jesse A. His question is, how do I keep suckers alive between musky trips? Do I need to do anything special to the water, and do I need to feed them? So you guys got plenty of suckers there at the musky shop when it's time to sucker fish. How you guys keeping them alive?
Well, I'm assuming he's talking later in the season or just in general.
Just general,
you know, cooler water period. Mm-hmm. So best thing to do is aeration. You know, they make those tablets for, you know, bait aeration that it looks like an Alka-Seltzer when you put it in there kind mm-hmm. of deal, where it bubbles up. Don't go crazy on those. I've seen a lot of people buy those and dump too many in at one time. And sometimes I think that may be harmful.
Right.
The best thing is just a battery operated or AC, something you can plug into your, at home, aerator.
Mm-hmm.
And keep the water cool if you can, you know, keep it out of the sun. The biggest deal with live bait, of course, is, you know, is extreme change in temperature.
Absolutely.
You know, that's why, you don't see as much minnow usage, in the summer months when it's really hot. You know, mm-hmm. if you put your hand down where our minnow tanks are, let's say elbow deep, you wouldn't be able to stand it for more than a few seconds. I mean, it is very cold water. I don't know what the temperature is coming out there, but it's got to be in the 40s,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you can imagine taking something that's acclimated to that type of temperature and dumping in an 80 degree lake. It's just like, boom, instant heart attack. You
absolutely.
Know? My bait goes, it just keep them lively by trying to keep the water cool and about the same temperature as what you're fishing and keep it aerated.
Yeah. It's sort of like the old, bringing the goldfish home as a kid. You know, you can't just dump them straight into the fish bowl. You got to sort of acclimate there. And I know I had some horror stories of, you know, rest in peace, goldfish. You know, you just can't go dumping them. So, and the other thing he did ask that was interesting, though, is does he need to be feeding these things? Let's say he fishes the weekends and he's got a week in between trips there. Does he need to be putting a little sucker chow in there, I guess, for him?
No idea. I really don't. I can't remember. Anyone ever telling me that's a good question, though. I don't know. I mean, I'll ask our light bait guys. I mean, they feed them pellets or something. Mm-hmm. They've got something formulated, I think. If they are a pond raised or wild suckers, which is generally what we carry, mm-hmm. you know, the trapped ones that are trapped illegally by, you know, bait dealers mm-hmm, with licenses, you know, they go out and they try to get several hundred at a time or sometimes even 1,000 at a time. And they know what they're doing, but yeah, they got to be keeping them alive somehow. But I imagine they're store buying something, or I mean, they're ordering something that's formulated for these little animals. But
and to answer Jesse's question, I would say this. I mean, I don't know the straight answer on that. And like you said, we're just grasping here, but I wouldn't, if you're going to put anything in there for them to eat, don't overdo it. You know,
put a few worms in there.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. A couple red worms. I mean, it's not going to hurt his environment. So, you know, if he eats them instantly, hey, he might be hungry. You know, you feed him.
Yep, good call.
You feed him too much, you might end up having a pet, though. You know, can you feed him to a muskie? You look in his adoring sucker eyes hanging over the side of the boat. You know,
in a heartbeat,
Absolutely. All right. Leon with the next question here. With season over, what maintenance steps should I take with my musky reels? So what should he be doing with these reels with season over?
Well, first thing I do is back off the drag.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important, you know, back off that, all the spring tension in there. And you know, a lot of people that are really into it, basically never want to open up their reels, because I've seen it about a million times where someone's taken some of the side plates off.
Yeah.
And tried to, it's like, well, okay, I'll just squirt something in here and put some lube here and put some oil in here. And yeah, you tend to want to over lubricate it. Mm-hmm. Same thing with guns.
Yes.
You know, if you ever been around like a gun dealer, they'll talk about semi-autos where guys bring, you know, basically every piece of sediment, you know, if you're near sand and dirt and stuff like that, gets in there and gums it up, and it could do more damage than it's worth. Take your reels and send them to your local Real Repair authorized center. You know, we use Matt's Real Repair mm-hmm. and Sportsman's Repair. They're both kind of close to where our location is. And, you know, they don't charge much. You know, no. I can't quote a price, but it's worth it, like yearly maintenance. It might not be necessary, but peace of mind, a lot of people do that. They'll just, you know, take six reels, ship them over there, drop them off, and he goes through them. You know, if it's yeah. part worn, he'll find it, you know, and lubricate it and get them. Feel like a new reel when they come back.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's a good point is, yeah, don't if you don't know how to do it, don't go jumping in there, you know, because there's tiny
something springs out of yeah. there. You might not even find it on the floor. Right. There's a lot some of little pieces in there.
Oh, I've done that a billion yep. times. I'm sitting here on my hands and knees. Hey, babe, can you help me come find? Yeah. This tiny little reel piece just floating around in the rug. All right. Yep. Next question is Chris. How do you repair a Bulldog or Medusa after a muskie has gotten a hold of it? So I'm guessing the classic, we got cuts, we got tear or tail tears. What do you recommend, my man, for a torn up Bulldog or Medusa?
Well, you can certainly glue it. Mm-hmm. The tricky part with that is finding the right glue that's going to work with that particular plastic. I've spoken with Brad from Muskie Innovations uh-huh. in the past about that. And I remember flat out, I asked him, what glue are you recommending, you know, for tears? Uh-huh. We're not talking about losing a tail or something. We're just right. talking about, you know, repair. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, and things change over the years. I mean, he's making everything that he can, here in the States now. Mm-hmm. So I think he's using more of a standard formula for the plastics, mm-hmm. but in the past and, you know, in between chaos stuff too, I don't believe, don't quote me on this, but you know, you go from one size Medusa to say a Poseidon or something, there might be a different formulation and there probably is on the plastic. So you got these yeah. different glues. One glue could be like mended or something, could work unbelievable on one of these soft plastics mm-hmm. and set, you know, within seconds, and the other one, and you could put it on a different one and it won't appear to work. And if that's the case, if you got one type of glue like Pro Soft or mm-hmm. mended or something in your boat, it's not working. Get a lighter or one of those little torch steels. Mm-hmm. You ever seen those things? Those little like miniature ones with the propane or something.
Yeah.
Boom. Just try to heat it up enough that it'll stick together and that'll get you through, you know, the rest of the day, at least, you mm-hmm. know, repair wise.
And be careful if you're using mended or the Pro Soft. I previously this year glued my hand to a tackle box with the Pro Soft bait glue.
That's not cool.
Oh no, yeah. It set up really fast, but that stuff, that's what I use on all mine is the Pros. And it seems to set up really quick, but like you said, there's some baits that it just doesn't seal as quickly.
Yeah, and it's not the brand of glue.
No,
yeah,
it's
don't,
it's
yeah, don't bash because you know we've got a bunch of different.
Yeah,
yeah, we've got several different manufacturers of what you I guess you call super glue. You know, mm-hmm. You know, situations where we're repairing. Sometimes when you know a guy brings something in, it's like here we'll try to put your tail on your. Hellhound or something,
right.
You know, that's something that has a, you know, like a 5-inch teaser tail on mm-hmm. the back and, you know, you drop some glue on there and then only to realize it doesn't work at all. And, you know, you feel kind of embarrassed. It's like, oh, okay. try a different one and then boom, one. It works. You know, that's the way it is. It's weird.
In my boat, you know, I keep Pros and I keep just some stuff from the like, you know, the inexpensive super glues because exactly what you said, it's going to depend on the composition of that plastic. And you pointed out just I think the composition of like a Poseidon and a Medusa, that's a different material for sure. So you're just going to have to search and
yeah, I'm guessing they are.
You
right,
know, and if you can't get through the day with it, or if you know, if it's a major repair, I've always had, like you said, really good luck with just heating up like a butter knife. Burning that tail back on if you got to. It's probably not the manufacturer's recommended way of repair, but you can yeah. get through it. I don't think the muskies necessarily care how it's put back together, you know.
No.
And it's just
no. No.
Hey, and if it's too torn up, call Jay at the Muskie shop and buy another one. How about that?
I mean, they're plastic, so you're going to have backups, but you know, if you're on a trip or something, you know, it's like you want to keep fishing. Absolutely. You know?
Just try some different things there, Chris, and do your best on it, my friend. You just got to play with that one. Next question.
Well, one more thing, Stephen. You know, I was thinking, one more thing within the composition of the plastics, which we were talking about. I know some of the manufacturers, like Brad from MI, he was saying that he was always changing some within the different baits and bait sizes and stuff, because you got to find a balance between that thing being rigid enough, you know, to be durable, yet soft enough to flow correctly, they're trying to find a happy medium for that stuff to to react the way they want it to, I guess.
Absolutely. With those soft plastics, you just have to look at them as disposables. You know, it's no it's no different than fishing.
Unfortunately, right.
Yeah, it's just that's sometimes you get them where you go, it's a lost leader. Don't even fool with it. But for your minor cuts and scrapes, glue it up, burn it up, and just keep chucking it. Next up, we got Wayne, and he says, I love fishing crane baits, but I have an issue with them getting waterlogged after hits where they're made out of balsa wood. What can I do? Sort of a similar question there. I know immediately is glue them. If those crane baits, I've actually, grew up in West Virginia, fished plenty of crane baits with the family's fish with Bill. That's the nature of those baits, and just glue them.
Crane baits. Yeah. Awesome stuff. Oh, it's cool. They're still available. Absolutely. We got a couple big shipments of them this year. You know, we always try to buy as many as we can from those folks. They're balsa wood, balsa wood's about as soft a wood as you can get. And you're going to get hook wear on those about as easy as you would on like an old jackpot or something like that. They just wear.
That's just the nature.
One thing I've always done is just get some, go to the hardware store, get some, clear 2-ton epoxy.
Exactly. Like the Inex. Yeah. Just brush it.
Yeah. I mix up a little bit of that. Like I've done that on with a lot of different wood baits, Suex and such, where it's like, I want the paint job to hold and the hook wear to be at a minimum, dab a little bit in there. It soaks up and drives overnight really hard, and it's clear, and it will add a little bit of weight to the bait. Yes. So if you go nuts on it, you'll change the balance of the bait. But those real soft wood baits, it could help prolong the life, I would think pretty well.
It's just one of those things too. Once again, crane baits in my book are moderately disposable. You know, it's a couple fish bait, and that's just the nature of fishing crane baits. But like you said, on that, and I've done that. Actually, me and Ross from Burning Eights talked about this on the phone a while ago about putting that coat on there. And like you said, take it really easy, because it doesn't take a lot to throw that off. And especially myself, I change the hooks out on crane baits when I first get them.
Do you put heavier hooks on?
I put one size
larger.
What is it? The 20? I'm at a loss on sizes. 506. What are the sizes here? Let me see. Speaking out of
probably time. Like 2-0s, 3-0s.
Saying like the bait size, the actual model.
Oh, like a 206 model, a 6-inch.
Yeah, the 206. I thought I was. They're all enumerated on your crane baits. Yeah, so the 206. Yep. I'm running three of the KVD 3-0 triple grips on those, but on some of the smaller stuff, just foregoing. And I'm actually looking at Muskie Shop right now.
You know who likes those hooks?
Oh, you know who I stole that from, right?
Big Joe.
So those hooks are awesome.
The big man, he loves those. Good stuff.
He texted me those a couple years ago, and I went, whatever, and I didn't buy them. And he goes, have you tried those hooks? And I go, no. And he said, you're a moron, So, in so many words, but I ended up doing it. Those hooks are fantastic. I run those on my shallow raiders, depth raiders, run them on crane baits. Actually, I run them on my slammers too. Those are a great hook. And the other ones, I know you guys, you have the larger hooks as well, correct?
I can't remember.
Let me look.
Yeah, I know we've got some in there. I think they go up to 5-0 maybe. but I'm not. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah, you got the triple grips. Okay, so one trick that I have with those is putting those on jackpots and dancing raiders. And actually okay. get a really good action out of those. Because it's a really, like, the larger, what we're talking about for the crane baits are a thinner shank, a smaller hook in general. But the
real light wire, yeah.
Real light wire, but the Mustad Triple Grip 3X are really, like, a really beefy hook.
Heavy hook. You're adding a lot of weight there. And plus, you got to change those split rings, too. Yep. They're really light.
And I could... talking about like a jackpot, we could spend all day on mods. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of stuff you can do to beef those up. That's why, you know, personally, I'm with my Walk the Dog going with the Dancing Raider because it's already beefed up. But going with those triple grips on there makes it ride a little bit lower in the water, and I get a really solid action of it. That we're way afield here from this guy's crane bait question down the hook rabbit hole, but that's worth looking at for sure. And next one, we got Mike P. What is the best way to organize musky lures? Should I separate them in small boxes or get one large tackle box? I have too many lures and they're making a mess. Mike, I think we all have too many lures and they're making a mess. What do you like? Yeah, it is. You said Joe actually goes with the small separates. You know,
I like the concept of owning tons of different tackle boxes, absolutely. But you know,
it's situational. I mean,
I've got some Lakewood, some old Planos, mm-hmm. and a ton of Plano 3730s and 3731s, yep. which are those 3-inch deep, clear ones, you know, inexpensive, tough. You know, you're going fishing with a buddy or something, you grab a couple of those, throw them in a duffel bag or whatever you're taking. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're jumping in somebody's boat for the afternoon or whatever, and you're getting a lot of baits in there. But yeah, I mean, it's nice to have a larger box too that you can organize and have ready for, you know, that time when you need to take it out.
I like, you know, you guys have a lot of the Lakewood stuff, which the Lakewood Monster is. I mean, if you got a lot of tackle and you want a lot of tackle on your boat, that's the box.
Lakewood's it's great stuff. It always has been. Really, you know, they improved them last year. With an interchangeable system, so mm-hmm. they actually made them better because the insides were always glued in there mm-hmm. previous to about a year ago, and you can interchange that and make certain sections wider or narrower, just, you know, custom fit for whatever. You're putting bent arm spinner baits or inline spinners, you know, they need particular little homes, you know. So mm-hmm. yeah, and you got some big baits in there, you know, you got some big supernatural headlocks or something
you need some room. Yeah, absolutely.
You need room. Yeah, those are wide baits,
you know. You say that and like you would get into like, what is it, a 12-inch triple D, you know, just the lip on that thing. You've got monster baits, and I know the Lakewood will hold it. The other option was I always say this wrong. I'm from the South, folks. Is it Flambeau?
Yeah, Flambeau, yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I nailed it. But the Flambeau Maximizer, that's another, you know, just a really big, beefy box I know you guys offer. You know, as per your question, I like what you said about having multiple boxes. The Plano 7915, though, is sort of a classic, too, like their big game box.
Yep. You know. Yep. That's a good one. You know, again, you know, you're not going to get everything you own more than likely in that box, you know, because
you need,
I think,
a
there's
separate
3-inch
boat.
Cubes, you know.
You're right.
I mean, at the very least, start with some Plano 3730s. They're mm-hmm. like 8 bucks or something like that.
Right.
You know, I got a stack of those things and I'll store those and it's easily visible inside. You know, mm-hmm. they're 3 inches deep. So, you can go a couple layers on them, but great for storing stuff.
Absolutely. And Mike, as per your question, I don't think that there's a perfect way, you know, because it's all situational. You know, like you want that. If you're out there by yourself and you don't know, have that big box. And like you're saying, have some of those small boxes if you're going to go jump in your buddy's boat, you know, because I'm sure you've done this, Jay, where – you know, you ask somebody to go out with you and they show up and they bring everything they own too. You know, don't be that guy showing up with two giant Lakewoods and, you know, and showing up with that. So have your little small storage there on the side. So,
yep.
All right, man. Boom. Next one we got up, Jerry G. I want to start making my own bucktails. What size wire should I use? And what are the benefits of heavier blades?
Mm-hmm.
So you got, I know you guys sell components there too. And he, you know, wanted to know what's the difference, I guess, what's the difference in the wires? What size wire should I use?
Yeah, we carried tons of lure making equipment. And mm-hmm. when I say lures, mainly spinners,
right.
You know, yeah, it's, that's a whole new ball game right there, boy, getting into spinners. You could go nuts with that. And that's fun. And it's a great winter project.
Absolutely.
Lots of people do that. As for the wire, I mean, start with 051 gauge, mm-hmm. 0.051. That's kind of like the industry standard. You'll find lighter wire on some baits. You know, lighter wire will vibrate more, but mm-hmm. it'll also bend easier, and it'll be harder to get it completely straight and run true. If you do, you know, even catch a pike on it, it could bend it. Mm-hmm. And there's heavier stuff out there too. There's almost like that bicycle spoke type.
Oh yeah.
Just 062, 060.
Yeah.
That's hard to bend. That's, you know, certain tackle makers can't accommodate that, that size wire. So 051's great. Yeah. You can bend it with a hand tool or a pro tackle maker.
Yeah. And like you're saying is there, I don't think you should, as per his question, you don't have to limit yourself either. Buy a few different sizes so you have some variety in there.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I sort of laughed a little bit when you're saying like the bike spokes. Once again, Booker, I mean, I've seen him make some, and it's just like, this is ship cable, you know, and he's building jigs to do that. I'm sitting here, you know, you're never going to bend that out. But one thing too that I do in my bucktails is just make them, if you're going to use the thinner wire, if you're worried about bending, make it a jointed body. Sort of in the realm of the MEPS, you know, the MEPS Flashaboo and Marabou, they just join those together, which also makes it a little more versatile. You can have different, you can mix and match sets of blades and skirts if you sort of just make a jointed bucktail with a split ring there in the middle. And then the second part of his question was pertaining
to heavy blades. The different sound, they're putting out a different sound. Mm-hmm. It's not as popular a choice as going with, what is it? 025.
I think
that's
kind of
a standard gauge. 040 would be considered like a heavy gauge blade.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to have a different thump to them. Some people like them for their durability. Actually, the lighter blades will bend over time and you won't mm-hmm. notice it, but they'll put out a different pitch. Yeah, I mean, you look at like the whole cowgirl thing, mm-hmm. which started over a decade ago. You know, Muskie Mayhem started those, and they run, let's see, 051 wire. They run standard gauge blades, and then you look at someone like Spanky Baits, who makes a similar type, you know, lineup. You know, Flashaboo body, double blades, big double blades, small double blades, big variety of them.
Mm-hmm.
They like to use the heavy blades,
right?
You know, and sometimes you just got to experiment and find out, you know, what's going to work for you and what you like.
Absolutely.
They'll trip differently too, you know, when mm-hmm. in terms of ease of starting spinning when you start that cast.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I've noticed, you know, obviously there's a different vibration there, but your thicker blades though, sometimes they're going to run deeper for you. You know, you're picking up weight there, not just
a little bit more head weight on the front of the
right. So you got a little more head weight, so they're a little bit easier to run deeper. But like you said, play around with that. You know, make combinations. That's the joy of making your own bucktails. You whatever you can dream up, you can make it.
Yeah.
You know, you want a willow leaf and a mag 10 on the other side. Build it. You know, might not work, but you're having fun. And
never know until you try.
You never know until you try.
It's always cool catching a muskie on a bait you made. It's a cool feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. And next up is Aaron. I want to get a good pair of polarized sunglasses for muskie fishing. What should I be looking for in a pair of polarized sunglasses? What makes them good for muskie fishing? And the second half of his question, does lens color matter?
There's a lot of manufacturers out there. We carry that Flying Fisherman line.
Those are not expensive.
I have a pair of those,
and they're really good, by the way.
Yeah, they're nice.
But they're nice for the bang for the buck. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, they're polarized, and that's just key. Just make sure they actually are polarized. Mm-hmm. Polarized. It's in terms of the. I mean, that's key with cutting glare. It's mm-hmm. just you have to have polarized sunglasses, and you should be wearing them all the time while musky fishing.
Absolutely.
I mean, look at it as protection too, in case. Mm-hmm. I mean, lures go flying all the time. You know,
I actually had a client, and it wasn't his fault. It was just a nasty backlash. Hit me square in the.
I know what you're gonna say.
scratch the lenses. Of the glasses. And yeah, you know exactly what I'm going to say, but if I had not been wearing them, I would have been really bad. Dude, I'd look so cool with an eye patch though. You got like standing there, like, here's me holding a big fish. I got an eye patch. I mean,
yeah, playing your telecaster.
I'll play my telecaster.
Ding, down.
Ding, ding, nice. Down. Absolutely. You ever seen a man in an eye patch and a cowboy hat? So, you know, like you said,
Oh boy.
We're far afield now. But like you said, protection. Good test to see, and I've had people show up on the boat on guide trips. They're, and I'm not knocking any brands, but they're wearing some, you know, some inexpensive, like, they got them at the dollar store kind of deal. Glasses are supposed to be polarized, and I'll, you know, they'll have a follow, and I'll go fish, and they're looking at me like, what? You know, it's like a deeper
follow.
They're not seeing it. It's just not cutting the glare.
Yeah.
And a good way to tell if your glasses are polarized, if you're wearing Polaroid glasses, you know, it's polarized. Come on, Steve. But a good way to check your polarized glasses on the screen of your phone. If you have a polarized set of glasses on, it'll look sort of rainbowish on your cell phone screen.
I didn't know that.
There's a few other ways to check. And one thing I'll tell you, I really like the glasses you guys offer. I wear a lot of Maui Jims too. Spend money on your polarized. Don't cheap out on those. And Aaron also wanted to know, does lens color matter?
Yeah. Gray is important for sunny conditions, mm-hmm. and amber for cloudy or low light.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to have both, you know,
because
conditions are always changing. But yeah, that's ideal right there. And amber works as an all-purpose too. You know,
absolutely.
I run amber usually, and if it's sunny out, it's like, hey, I still got sunglasses on. They're still working. They're still cutting glare. So
I noticed a difference, and we're talking about 2 weeks difference in the trip going from Eagle to Lake of the Woods, and watercolor. So if you're fishing clear water, I like the dark, the gray. If you're fishing stained, and I don't know if this is a rule of thumb. This is actually, if I sound like an idiot, I'm blaming Tyler Andrews, Joe's cameraman, on this. He's the one that told me, you know, match your lens color to the color of the water. But this past trip on Lake of the Woods, I was wearing like a grayish set of Maui Jims and had a little bit of difficulty. And switched out with him. So there's a, you know, maybe it's not 100% accurate. I don't know. But at least from my experiences, is having some different sets there on hand. So you can switch out based on water color, you know, if those fish are coming in. So once again, the fun of musky fishing, you can't have too much of anything, you know.
No.
So which is, use that.
It really is critical to have great sunglasses and wear them all the time when you're musky fishing. Because it's so important to see those follows, you know, to see the fish coming. Unlike fishing for anything else, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're not seeing the follows, you don't know if you're even, how do you even know if you're waiting, you know, when do I figure eight, when you know, and just having that equipment. So get you a couple pair, Aaron, try some different things. Just also too, don't get the darkest of the dark. Don't get the lightest of the light. You know, I actually switch pairs out when we get into the evening. Every day I'm on the boat, I put on a lighter shaded pair so I can see as long as I can until it's dark. So, you know, think of it as a tool. It's not like a one size fits all. These are my glasses. Have a couple different things situational there. All right. Last question. You've made it thus far. You have a perfect score going in here to the final. Don't lose here at the end. There's no prizes or anything. It's not a game, but don't lose. Dan wants to know, I broke the end tip of my musky rod off by stepping on it in the boat. First off, I'll say, Dan, I've done that a billion times. Don't feel bad. I'm klutzy as they come. But he's broke the tip off of his rod in his boat. How do I replace the end tip of a musky rod?
Tip. Okay. Well, let's hope it's just an inch or two, not mm-hmm. more. You can send it back to the manufacturer mm-hmm. and see if they'll warranty it, you know.
Right.
You know, warranties are for manufacturer's defect, not
I stepped.
Yeah, not running over it with a truck or something, you know. But
giving it the old Bill dance.
Manufacturers are they're great about taking care of that stuff. Yeah. They really are. I mean, the amount of problems with broken rods on a yearly basis is really, really limited these days. So, mm-hmm. you know, one thing you can do is instead of dealing with shipping it, I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever tried to ship a rod. People talk about shipping costs these days. Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, one guy not long ago he's like, no, we asked if we were going to send a rod back to St. Croix or something like that because he broke it or something. And say, well, we can send it back for you, you know. He's like, no, that's okay. I'll just, you know, I live near a PO or something.
Right.
He came back like a week later. He goes, that cost me $55 to ship it.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's terrible. It's getting worse and worse. But anyway, one thing you can do if you do just break the, you know, break the tip off is just put a replacement tip on, tip top.
You guys sell tips.
Yeah. We've got some on the website. You know, there's different qualities of them, of course. You know, some of the, like the St. Croix tip tops, some mm-hmm. of these SIC really high end ones get kind of pricey. They might be $15-$20, but a lot of times it'll cost you less than $10. What you want to do is kind of rough up the area where the tip top's going to go over, so the glue will take to it better. And use hot melt glue. Don't use super glue. Don't epoxy or anything like that. Just use cheap hot melt glue.
We're talking like grabbing mom's glue gun.
It is, yeah. These it's like a dollar for one of these little tubes. Basically, you just heat it up and put a little dab on there. It just looks like liquid rubber, and slip it over and wipe the excess off and make sure it's straight and it'll set in about 20 seconds and you're ready to fish. So, you can salvage a broken rod that way, or you can bite the bullet and send it back and see if they'll replace it. But you know, if a rod's broken, it can't be repaired. I mean, if the blank's actually broken, it obviously can't be repaired. So what they're going to offer is a replacement, whether there's a nominal price to replace it or it'll be free of charge. That's up to them to determine, but if it's just a short break, it's worth just putting that tip top on, in my opinion. And, you know, the rod will be usable after that.
Absolutely. Jam it on there. One thing, and we're done with questions, but I did want to bring up, I actually talked to you about this on the phone a couple weeks ago, the Shield series mm-hmm. of rods that you guys have, the Musky Shop rods. I'll tell you.
Yeah, we're getting some new models in. We've got them on order. We added a few models. Hopefully we'll have them for the sports show season when we go to the Milwaukee mm-hmm. Muskie Show in February. That's kind of the target anyway, but yeah, it's a good rod series. Yeah,
that's why
really good feedback on them. We've had them a few years, you know, and had several people comment or call us back after getting one and they order two more.
Yeah.
You know, the same models in some cases. And that's like a really good testimony.
Oh, yeah. What I was telling Jay and tell the users previously, I had a client show up and he had the 8.6, which I think it was like your 8.6 heavy fast, I believe, or just the 8.6
heavy. Okay. Yeah.
And it showed up with this rod. And he's fishing all day long. He hooks into a fish and we're sort of talking afterwards. And I said, man, that's a really good looking rod. What is it? And he told me that was the store brand. I was blown away because the quality of that rod. I thought, you know, he's fishing a super custom, you know, like I've had this built, you know, it just had that look to it. It was a really nice piece of equipment. And like, you didn't know I was going to bring this up before I called you and said, hey, be on the podcast. I'm not, you know, it's not, you didn't want to plug this, but I at least want to bring it up. If you're looking for a rod, that's a great option because they are well built in a really good piece of gear there. So, But
yeah,
man,
we're pretty happy with them. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I hope I didn't beat you up too much with the user questions. I know they keep flowing in every day and people have tons and tons and tons of musky fishing questions. So we're going to get you on back here pretty soon, Jay. But thank you so much for being on the Musky 360 podcast, my man.
Thank you, Stephen. Hey, and great job with the app in general, you've done with it. If you guys don't know, Stephen, he is doing the work on that thing, like all the, you know, all that behind the scenes programming and all that to make this thing work and accessible to Apple and Android phones. And there's a lot of work goes on making that thing work the way it is. And just the setup. I like the way you guys are changing things around too, and adding different sections. Pretty cool stuff.
You know, I dream in ones and zeros and muskies. You know, so it's just like sitting here looking at code, and, you know, and just we're just doing our best. That's one thing we're trying to evolve. If you're listening out there and you see something that you want on the app but isn't on there, man, shoot us a message. We're just trying to put everything that we could think of into this that's available.
Yeah, for sure.
You got the moon phase. I mean, and I know you're going to do a promo with Joe and go over some of the features. If people are listening to this, they already have the app. But, one thing a lot of people don't know, and this is on the back end, you can pull up that moon phase data wherever you are with no cell phone signal, which is
really cool,
which is a big thing of standing out in the middle of Eagle Lake, which, you know, there's one tree I can stand by and make a phone call. So loading an app isn't going to happen. And here I am out in the middle of the big water part of the, we call it the world way out there. And I'm going, when is moonset? You know, and I have no cell phone signal. I got nothing. And if I previously, I'm taking screenshots and saving them in my phone or carrying around a scrap of paper. If you load your phone up, let's say we're crossing the border or we're up in Canada before you lose signal, open up the Musky 360 app. You know, it's always updating. It's always adding data to itself. Right. So if you have that open when you have cell signal, you're going to have that data the rest of the week. You can test that. You can turn your Wi-Fi, turn your cell signal off on your phone. You can still pull up the moon phase data, which I don't think a lot of people know that, but is
neat. Yeah, that's a great tip. I didn't know that.
Yeah, which is huge. Trust me, that was really easy to do. It was a pain in the behind, but you know, putting a lot of love and care into this thing to make it as usable as possible. But man, I appreciate the compliment on that. I know you're going to be back again, and thank you again for coming on the podcast, and thanks everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Stephen. Have a great night.
The Musky 360 podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in big fish products, and The Musky Shop.